Hi and welcome to the CDC Insight podcast. CDC is the UK's development finance institution and impact investor. And in this episode, we're sharing some of the highlights from a recent Insight event. These events share practical lessons on private sector investment and development based on our experiences, knowledge, and research. Now, today we're looking ostensibly at the role that impact investment can play in the economic recovery from the coronavirus pandemic. But really, as this conversation was unfolding, it became a bit broader than just that. And we also covered the ways that impact investment can become more commonplace globally as well. And I'm pleased to say that we have two of the world's leading voices on this topic for you to listen to. Our main guest is Sir Ronald Cohen, the chairman of the Global Steering Group for Impact Investment and the Portland Trust, and really one of the founders of the impact investment movement as it's known today. Sir Ronald is joined on the panel by Dolla Kabanda, who is currently a non-executive director here at CDC and has previously held senior investment roles at places like the IFC, Barclays and Citibank. And the two of them were speaking to your host, Colin Buckley, who is General Counsel and Head of External Relations here at CDC. But before we get to all of that, sorry, I've got just one more name to throw at you. Kicking things off is CDC's CEO, Nick O'Donoghue, who has worked with Sir Ronald Cohen on numerous occasions before and gives him a fitting introduction. So here you go. I'll hand you over to Nick, first of all.
For many of you, Ronnie will not need much introduction, but I will try to give you some sense of Ronnie's background. He has had an extraordinary life. He began life in Egypt, was expelled with his family from Egypt in his early teens, came to the UK with very little money, speaking almost no English. 8 years later, he was not just speaking English, but he was president of the Oxford Union. After graduating from Oxford, he went to Harvard Business School. After leaving Harvard Business School, he started the firm that became known as Apax. Apax became, under his leadership, over the next 25 or 30 years, the largest private equity and venture capital firm in Europe. And I think you'd sort of say, if Ronnie had stopped then, that would have been a life of extraordinary achievement. But it's actually what Ronnie has done since then that has really been most extraordinary. He was asked in 2000 by Gordon Brown, then Chancellor of the Exchequer, to chair the Social Investment Task Force. And the mandate of that task force was really to explore ways in which capital could be used and mobilized to address social issues. And that really became the beginning of what has grown into the impact investment movement. Ronnie, over the next 10 years, founded three companies: Bridges, which was really the world's first social investment private equity firm; Social Finance, which became developed the world's first social impact bond; and Big Society Capital, which was the world's first social investment wholesaler. He's always inspiring, and it's really a huge privilege to have the opportunity to have him speak with us today. So with that, I will hand it back to you, Colin, to pose some questions to Ronnie.
So thanks very much, Nick, and welcome Ronnie to CDC. So as Nick mentioned, I mean, you are a pioneer of the impact movement, and you've been championing it now for over two decades. But before we go into some of the details, maybe we should start from first principles. And so remind us why we need an impact revolution, and what is it about now which makes you think its time has come?
Our system, our capitalist system, has become self-defeating. And all of us on this webinar realize it. We can't manage to cope with the scale of the social and environmental challenges we face. And the reason is that the search for profit and ignoring all of the consequences of the actions that are taken in achieving a profit is a very complicated system, which leads to really huge social and environmental costs. And what we're talking about with impact investment is bringing a third dimension to risk and return, bringing the dimension of impact. We can measure impact today. Even a decade ago, we couldn't measure the impact of companies, the impact that their operations create on the environment, that their employment creates on people, and that their products create on people and the environment. But technology today enables us to do so. And so it presents us, Colin, with the opportunity to turn our system into one that is capable of bringing solutions to our great challenges, to improve our society, to make it fairer, and at the same time, to protect our environment.
So thanks, Ronnie. I mean, one of the things about investing in finance is that there is almost an intellectual purity around it, of profit maximization. No matter what you do, you can always reduce financial success down to profit. And by comparison, impact seems a little nebulous. You mentioned that it's easier to measure, but there are many different impacts and there are many different kinds of measurement. I mean, why should we demand of investors who are used to this kind of singular focus that they should now adopt this more nebulous approach to investing behavior?
So the reason is because we're seeing a convergence of three very powerful trends. The first, which hasn't been lost on any of us on this webinar, is that values have changed. Consumers and talent no longer want to purchase or to work for companies that are destroying the environment or using child labor. And this hasn't been lost on investors because the implications for the success of their investments are huge. And so investors are now channeling $40 trillion to achieve more than profit through ESG investment and a trillion to impact investment, where the impact is measured as well as having the same intention as ESG. So that is one massive trend which changes the rules of the game in terms of acquiring clients, talent, and the support of investors. The second massive trend is something that humanity has never been able to contemplate before, which is using our new technologies, which have taken a huge leap forward: artificial intelligence, machine learning, augmented reality, and many other technological leaps that enable us to deliver impact globally at a scale we could never have contemplated previously. And the third one is technology giving us a breakthrough in the measurement of the impact of individual companies, turning them into monetary values that can be reflected in their financial accounts. And so the rules of the game have already changed for investors and companies. If you look at ESG investment, it has already tilted the scales in financial markets in the sense that you can see a correlation in the data at Harvard Business School in its impact-weighted accounts initiative, which I'm privileged to chair. You can see there in data about the environmental impact of 1,800 companies, where a higher level of pollution valuation relative to competitors. So the rules of the game have changed for companies, and companies are beginning to feel the pressure to create transition plans. We're now talking openly about companies publishing transition plans to net zero. Well, we're going to have the same thing with regard to diversity and differences in gender pay and advancement of minority groups within companies and so on. We're seeing shareholder revolutions at the Procter & Gamble shareholder meeting just a month or so ago. Two-thirds of shareholders rebelled against management because of what? Because of the deforestation that P&G is creating through its use of palm oil.
So you've alluded to two kind of rhetorical tools that could be used in convincing financial professionals to start adopting a broader notion of impact. One of them is the relationship with, you know, ESG outcomes and financial performance. But that's really only one subset of impact. And the other one is, you know, shareholder activism. But I'm wondering if there are other tools or broader messages that are in the long run going to compel this shift over to adopting impact investing broader.
A very good question, Colin. The most powerful push is going to come from the fact that optimizing risk, return, and impact actually delivers better financial returns. Now, with the change in values that we've witnessed, than just optimizing risk and return. So it's not surprising that you see fossil fuel valuations crash in 2020, while the market cap of Tesla multiplies by 7, and clean energy ETFs multiply by 2 or 3 times. So the dynamic which has been created now is one where companies like Tesla can aspire to have greater market valuations than several of their competitors put together, 5 competitors put together. And investors are beginning, with the changing view of short-term profitability that has come from technological development and the big tech companies, which have established business models that have led to years of losses before effectively imposing a monopoly on the whole of their market. Investors are beginning to draw correlations between impact and future growth and performance. And that is what is going to drive impact entrepreneurship and investment in public markets.
Great. So I'd like to widen out our conversation now by inviting and introducing Dalika Banda to join us. So Dalika is a global ambassador of the Global Steering Group for Impact Investment, which you know, and so you know her very well through that. She's also held non-executive director positions at EcoBank Transnational, Harith Infrastructure, and the DFID's Financial Sector Deepening Africa Program. She's a Zambian national based in Lusaka with over 25 years experience in international finance and banking. She's a former director at the IFC, and I'm very proud to say a former regional director for Africa at CDC Group, and presently one of our non-executive directors. So Dalika, welcome. If I can start, Dalika, with a question. I mean, you've been hearing Ronnie's views about impact investing, and this movement truly started, I think, in the United States and in mostly in Western Europe. But I wonder if I could start with your thoughts about how impact investing is playing out in the emerging market context, and in particular in developing economies.
I think, Colin, at the beginning of the conversation, you asked Ronnie, has impact investing come into its own time? This is regions of nascence, Europe and North America. It has actually come to a point where for Africa, I think we can even just drop the impact component and just say impact investing is what investment is about. It is a generic term that is the requirement for growth capital in continents, and I speak for Africa, but I also speak globally. I speak for South Asia, Bangladeshis of this world, in the sense that this has got to be a call to action to actually put money into very creative minds. And for me, it truly is now about the delivery of two things, the delivery of capital and the delivery of technical assistance. giving people the capability to scale and upscale their own businesses. So I believe that for emerging markets, this conversation is extremely critical. I think it is particularly critical in the face of COVID, but I would highlight as investors and hard-nosed investors that COVID is not the imperative that we should be talking about. COVID merely highlighted fault lines that were there already. And these fault lines to me suggest we need to start thinking, and I think people are already thinking across three dimensions. And those three dimensions for me is an integration of everything that we're talking about, which is foreign policy, development, and investment. These three are coming to a confluence in terms of, are we creating the world in which we want to live, especially as the borders become porous, especially as information becomes ubiquitous, especially as the previously blinded or uninformed and inexposed populations of emerging markets through technology become much more informed, much more aspirational, and fundamentally a much bigger component of our global society than ever was the case before.
Thank you for that, Dalek. And let's focus a little bit more, because as you know, one of the emerging issues in development is a focus on the most difficult economies, often referred to as fragile and conflict states. Is there something fundamentally different in the calculus of impact and risk and return in those countries that makes impact investing either more useful as a tool or in fact less apposite in those kinds of economies?
So I think for investors, we are wired in a certain way. We are wired in a way that our first instinct is to identify the risk. And then our second instinct is to say, okay, can I make this risk work vis-a-vis the upside or the reward that I am looking at? And usually the risk overshadows the opportunity. Now, we speak about, there are some more fragile countries, even within the fragile already emerging markets. But to me, the conversation should be much more, there's two sides to this conversation. From the investor perspective, the conversation should be much more about, do I see an opportunity in this situation that fits with my vision and my mission? But on the other hand, Colin, is what I call the sovereign responsibility. I think that for too long, we as a global world have been too lenient on the miscreants, if I can put it that way, of certain governments. Let's be blunt about it. Now, when you are bringing money, whether you're a donor or whether you're an impact investor or whether you're a non-impact investor, you are looking for a reward. You are looking for a certain outcome. And that outcome has got to be demonstrated. We have governments that are very ready to take money in, not just in emerging markets, in many markets, that are very ready to take taxpayers' money, but are not ready to be accountable for the use of that money and for the outcomes of that money. And that's why I really like the impact-weighted accounting that Ronnie is pursuing, because at some point we must be able to say, our impact has been to alleviate poverty and to enhance inclusion, and we have been able to do it through this, and that has got to be the outcome. So we have got to reverse the way we behave and think about the outcome and hold our host governments accountable for those outcomes.
So thanks, Dalek. Rani, let me take this back to you, because I mean, Dalek suggests, and accurately so, that there are different investors for different investment markets. But I think if we looked at the pool of impact investors, very few of them are really investing in developing countries. And I guess two questions there. I mean, one, is that in a way an indictment of the impact side of impact investors, that they're shying away from these markets? And is there something that can be done to sort of drive more impact investment flows out of developed markets and more into developing countries?
So, Colin, the big change with this pandemic and the economic crisis it has occasioned is the arrival of impact. Now, impact affects the behavior of investors, and we've dwelt on that primarily, but it also affects the behavior of aid and philanthropy and of corporations. So to the extent that new instruments are coming along now, just as venture capital and investment in tech on public markets came 50 years ago, to the extent that new forms of investment are coming along now, investors are going to be prepared to pick them up because they will deliver better returns, basically. And in the case of pension funds, it's what their pension savers want today. In the case of wealthy families, it's what the younger generation want. So the question then is, okay, so what is going to be the scope for aid and philanthropy to play a different role than they have previously? Well, what impact has brought to aid and philanthropy is new approaches that are based on attracting investment money to deliver attractive risk-adjusted returns on the basis of achieving social goals through pay for success. But then I want to come to perhaps the biggest challenge before us. The biggest challenge before us is to change the behavior of companies so that, like Novartis, they begin to set impact objectives. Now, to the extent that impact accounting, such as is being carried out at Harvard Business School, demonstrates that you can measure the product impact of a company because you can have information today about the customers who are being served by these companies. And you can measure the amount that is going to more vulnerable consumers rather than to, you know, the well-off consumers in developed markets. That combination of risk return and impact will be attractive for some companies and for the investors in them. They will also lead these companies to direct investment to emerging markets because their attempt to deliver impact can't just be through the export of products. It makes more sense for them to build facilities in these countries. And it's one of the things, for instance, in our response to COVID, through testing capacity that needs to be local, or vaccination capacity that needs to be local. It's one of the mechanisms that the impact movement has been trying to persuade governments to use. So I think the ecosystem to which you referred that is being created now will create incentives for companies and for aid and philanthropy to begin to give opportunities for investors to optimize risk return and impact. But if we don't have rigorous measure of the impact created, we're all going to be victims of impact washing of one kind or another. And so bringing this transparency is hugely important to our success.
Thank you very much then to Sir Ronald Cohen and to Dolakha Banda for joining us on this podcast. We hope this conversation gave you some food for thought on the role of impact investment in supporting the economic recovery from coronavirus and beyond. And that's about it for today. But please do remember to like the show and subscribe to it if you're enjoying the podcast. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time with another episode. See you then.